Join Big Daddy on the Big Daddy Liberty Show every Friday mornings at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 101.9 High FM. The Big Daddy Liberty Show is the only show in South Africa that discusses current affairs, politics, and economic topics through the lens of liberty.
Molo Sambunani, hello house, and welcome to the first ever Big Daddy Liberty Show. That's right, Big Daddy Liberty Show. I am your host, your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. I know you're used to hearing me crossing straight to then introducing Sarah Gunn. That's the IRR show every Tuesday. I'm still part of that, and shout out to Sarah if she is listening. Shabbat shalom to all of you who are joining me on this first show of the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I'm so excited to be with you guys. This show is the show that looks at all current affairs, economic issues, social issues, and the political stories of the day through the lens of liberty, the very thing you never hear on South African radio. So I'm going to be bringing you a veritable mix of interesting guests, renowned thinkers, quality analysis on the everyday news to inform you, so that you, the individual, you, the family person, can be more informed. But as I begin the show, you know, every show will begin with the first sort of 5 minute, chat, a monologue, if you will, from Big Daddy Liberty on something which would have affected me in the week, some topical issue, a major issue that I feel like we need to have that conversation with, as I give you thinking points, things that you can engage on. And remember, in every show, you can contact your favorite fat boy in the studio by either calling the studio number 010-140-3020 or send us a telegram at 061-895-1019. Hey, if you're old school like me, then send me an SMS at 34519. Guys, when we come back from the break, I'm going to be looking at the news that made this week what it was. We'll see you after this short ad break.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. This is the first show, as I said, and I'm sure a lot of you might be wondering, what is the Big Daddy Liberty Show? What is liberty? Well, we're going to be viewing a lot of issues through something you never hear on radio at all. This is the only show that will be discussing current affairs and, you know, the everyday issues through the idea of how do we empower the individual? How do we empower families? So how do you create a society which is, you know, essentially, has three wonderful elements. The first is, you know, it's a free society, a society where individuals can actually pursue their own interests and, you know, free from any sort of impediments, whether you're poor or rich, be able to pursue your happiness. How do you build a prosperous society, one which actually allows individuals to make an income, build savings, and from those savings buy themselves options and not be dependent on a corrupt state? And the last one is, how do you build a property-owning society? We never have these sort of conversations on South African radio or even on TV. So a lot of how we view current affairs on this show will look at issues through that lens in providing an alternative way of viewing some of these issues. But anyway, in this next segment that I sort of am crossing into, I'm going to be looking at some of the news that made us think in this week, you know, and I'm going to begin with a bit of a funny one. It's funny, but it's not funny because, you know, over 250,000 people were affected by what happened, you know. Just this week in Cape Town, the trains literally came to a grinding halt. Why? Because PRASA, this is one of the state-owned entities that essentially runs all rail networks, or passenger rail networks in particular, in all major cities, didn't pay its electricity bill. It didn't pay its electricity bill. Can you imagine anything more ludicrous as that? An entire business which literally needs electricity to run its core function did not pay its bill. It had about 6.5 million rand outstanding, and Eskom, being the company that it is right now, literally said, hey, if we can do load shedding for the whole country, how about we do some load shedding for you right now? And they shut down the entire rail network in Cape Town with essentially no warning, or at least no warning to the public. And people found themselves stranded, not being able to get home. Again, it comes back to this issue of the state is not good at running pretty much anything. And to have a passenger rail agency like PRASA that controls the trains not pay its bills kind of tells you everything you need to know around trusting a government entity with running a critical service like the trains. I mean, world over, there are sort of hybrid arrangements of, you know, state ownership, but private sector management of train services, or even outright privatizing of trains. And yes, it won't be easy. It's not smooth sometimes to do the transitions. But generally speaking, you'll find a situation when you travel around the world that trains run on time. And in this country, we seem to relegate poor people to a substandard service, tongue twister. And for those of us who are in the middle class, we don't even bat an eyelid, because we don't experience trains that are full to the point where people are literally bursting at the seams of trains, you know, sort of riding outside of the train, and in some cases even on top of the trains. Which brings me to this weird notion now we have of the defense of the status quo by the EFF. The EFF, if you heard in the news bulletin, will be marching to the headquarters of Eskom, basically demanding that, you know, the status quo remain. The idea that Eskom be this bulky, massive state entity, you know, pretty much unable to deliver on its core function either. And that's what the EFF are looking to, or asking for the status, the status quo of. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, especially when I've just segued from explaining just how bad state ownership of some things can totally be. So we're in this weird place, I think, as South Africans, where we're not having the real conversations around what sort of reforms we need if we're to actually empower poor people. If you really care about poor people, then your first instinct isn't to relegate a substandard state service onto them, but for you personally, as the middle-class individual, to go to private sector companies. Because you know that they're more efficient and essentially they look after you better. And again, you can go down the line in terms of how you see this on an everyday basis. A politician, a leftist politician, will literally wax lyrical about the need for growing the state, growing government, pushing more of this what's called statism onto poor people. But for them personally and their families, hey man, it's private hospitals, private schools, private security, you name it. And again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those private services. I'm just calling out the hypocrisy of pushing something which is substandard onto poor people who have no options, but for yourself, having the freedom to choose as you see, as you like, essentially. So it's pretty crazy. And funny enough, my guest, who we're going to have in the studio a bit later, is from the Free Market Foundation. And we'll probably go into this as we look at the budget speech for 2020, because that was the other big news item for the week. But I'm going to hold my views on this until we get to that interview. And he's someone who's going to be very interesting on that. Guys, as we go to this first or second ad break, after the break, I will have Mr. Mpiake Dlamini from the Free Market Foundation.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I mentioned before the break, we have a special guest, someone who I think you're going to enjoy hearing from quite often. We have Mr. Mpiake Dlamini in the building. Mpiake, good morning to you, brother. How are you doing?
I'm good, Sitlin. How are you?
Excellent, man. Hey, man, I see this Friday morning has had you a little tired, homie. Has it been a long, rough week?
Yeah, it has. It has.
Hey, man, good to have you on the show. Yeah. Mpiake, we're going to be looking at the budget speech of 2020. This was arguably the big newsmaker for the week. And one of the questions I've been asking on my social media, for instance, is, you know, will the average South African feel at the end of the speech that, hey, they might actually be in a better shape economically and financially, really, at the end of the speech? And I'm not sure the answer to this is yes, if I look at some of the chatter from ordinary people on social media. But from our economists and the analysts and the traditional media, this speech was fantastic, according to them. Do you share that sentiment, Mpiake?
Well, I to an extent I do, because it was, I say that I look at the real reforms that came out of the speech. A time will tell if any of these will be implemented or it will just be like wishful thinking. So just on the strength of their word, which is what is a speech or a budget is, it gives you the government's word on what they plan to do, whether parliament approves, whether things change after the submissions for the relevant bills, the tax bills, the appropriations bills, the division of revenue bills, whether things change is completely up to parliament. But from the intention, it looks, I think it's a good statement of intent about where the government needs to go. Like, if you just look at the deregulatory measures, you look at the fact that forex controls are going to be liberalized somewhat. You look at the fact that individuals have a something of a reduction in their income tax burden, but of course it's not enough. But if you consider over the past few years, we've been struggling as income taxpayers because there's been no relief.
Mm.
But now this is, we actually had an increase last year, but they didn't call it an increase. They just allowed bracket creep to increase the taxes.
Mm. And can I quickly interject here? Because on the issue of the, because I suppose we can look at this in an almost a Western way of the good, the bad, and the ugly, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the good, I suppose, at face value, someone might say, yeah, absolutely. The fact that the minister didn't raise taxes is a fantastic thing. It's a good thing. It provides relief.
And no one expected it because it's been funny to me to see everyone like, you know, we expected this budget. But no one expected that there would be no tax increase.
Yeah, in fact, some of the news beforehand was like, oh, there'll be a special tax.
Exactly.
But here's where I think I get a little bit technical. Yeah. In my, not pessimism, but perhaps an analysis of that announcement, for example, is it really though a maintaining of the personal income taxes at the current level when the same minister in that speech then says, look, we project that inflation this year may be somewhere around 4.2%.
Yeah.
So are we really giving people tax relief when essentially inflation, which is another form of tax, by the way, on people, it's not spoken of a lot, but it essentially is because it's losing the value of a currency. Is it really a tax relief then in that regard?
So that's how they increased the income tax last year, by not adjusting the brackets for inflation.
Mm.
Whereas this year they actually adjusted for more than inflation. So it's actually a real tax relief. It's small, but it's a real tax relief. It's not illusory, right? But so I get your point of view, though, about like there is some bad in the speech. It's not like they're continuing. The SOEs that we continue committing ourselves to funding, they could take down whatever good plans the government has.
Before we get there, because I think the SOEs is the second major area I wanted to get to. I think the first one is just spending. BIK, spending.
Yeah.
Government spending is in and of itself the actual tax on citizens.
Yeah.
And our politicians seem very addicted to the lure of spending money that even sometimes they don't have. What do I mean by this? The minister basically says, guys, this year we're going to be running a 6.8% deficit. In other words, what we received as government versus what we're spending, there is a 6.8 difference in that. And let me put that in actual numbers. 300 billion rand in BRK. Yeah. Is this sustainable?
It is not. It's definitely not sustainable. It's the one, our children will have to pay for this.
Yeah.
And they'll either have to pay for it through direct taxes or through an indirect tax called inflation.
Yeah.
And so this is, it's always the same story, isn't it? Like, yeah, governments, they run into trouble and then we, as ordinary people, have to bail them out because that's what it is. And so you can't decide to have a massive public wage bill, have SOEs, have an expansive social welfare program, and be an emerging economy at the same time.
Mm.
This is just, it's completely crazy. You have to choose, you have to prioritize, you have to understand that there are trade-offs in everything you do, and I don't think the politicians appreciate that fact.
Funny enough, I think the one trade-off, this was the only silver lining for me, and it's a weird one because, let me put it to you, the only silver lining for me was the realization perhaps by the Treasury that they've reached that point of diminishing returns, what's called the Laffer curve in economics. Yeah. The idea that you just can't keep taxing people. The idea that, you know, you just keep raising taxes on and on and on. How do we know this? SARS itself, the South African Revenue Service, is basically saying, look, there's more cases of people just not paying taxes or evading paying taxes. I don't know, dear listener, maybe you're one of those people. I'm not going to ask you to out yourself, but do call in and contribute to this conversation. You can join us, of course, by the studio number at 010-140-3020 or send us a telegram at 061-895-1019 or an SMS at 34519. What did you think about the speech as we sort of provide some analysis and we go into it just now? Were you encouraged? Will this mean you'll have a few more rands in your pocket at the end of the month, at the end of the year? Let's have that conversation with you. Feel free to send comments or hey, find me on social media too. You can send your messages to @BigDaddyLiberty on Twitter or find me on Facebook. BIK, like the other area of course we saw, which sort of burst my bubble around the idea that maybe there is a bit of tax relief, is if they didn't increase personal income taxes, politicians definitely had their eyes set on indirect taxes, such as sin taxes and the like. Your thoughts about this? Should we have a government that taxes people
to
the hilt?
We should not. We should not. But, purely on the principle. Yes, we appreciate the fact that government decided to eliminate the transfer duty for all property below R1 million. Before it was just below R900,000. So now everything below R1 million now is transfer duty free. So that's we appreciate those things. And if you actually, it's a petty. These sin taxes are petty. They are mean, and they just punish poor people at the end of the day. Because no one is, if you enjoy drinking alcohol, and it's worse if you're an addict, you're not going to stop because of a tax. What you're going to do is you're going to take some of your sustenance money, like food for your children, all of these things, and buy alcohol. And so it's a silly tax. We should definitely scrap it. Having said that, if you look at the actual revenue that the government receives, income tax, I think, is the highest, followed by corporate income tax, if I'm not mistaken, and then followed by VAT. So these excise taxes are relatively small in the bigger scheme of things.
I'm going to move us on a little bit, because there is another player who, upon hearing this speech, came out, guns blazing. You know, South African Union, specifically COSATU, came out and literally said, I quote, "We're declaring war on the finance minister for the speech." Why? Because the finance minister essentially recognized that we cannot continue funding government at the levels at which we have been historically, because there is no money. But then you have unions who are saying, keep funding us, keep borrowing to sustain the current levels of government. Why are we listening to unions and BIK? Are they really, who governs? Is it the unions or the democratically elected government which faces the realities of governance?
Okay, so the fact that unions are, in South Africa, the South Africa economy is essentially a monopoly between big business and big labor.
Yeah.
So these two groups, they basically control, they set all their economic policy. Every government economic policy literally has to be approved by those two groups to go through a network.
At the expense, of course, of the ordinary man, you and me, and even small entrepreneurs. Yes. It's weird.
Just think of one example, the minimum wage, how it was implemented. President Ramaphosa, after suffering from pressure from the unions, when he was still deputy president, he announced that government would be researching this. They researched it, and I looked into that research. Most of it was mostly people who came from the unions themselves, who were paid by the union. Anyway, they researched it, they came up with a proposal, and then they went to NEDLAC and convinced and negotiated with those two groups, big business and big labor. And then once those groups had agreed, we had the Minimum Wage Act in South Africa, and then no one else was deemed important. They did consult other people, but the time that they spent on the inputs they took most seriously was from those two groups. So this is what South Africa is, and the union. Unions are just want to maintain their position of privilege of being able to control large parts of the economy.
And by the way, big business too likes, cumbersome regulation and minimum wages, because it means it prices out the smaller, perhaps competitive companies who could be, taking some of their market share. Talk to me about that almost corrupt nexus, of big business, big labor, and the big government.
In South Africa, what you get is a lot of people who think that people who love liberty, for example, they are just, they support business. They think business can do no wrong. That's far from the truth.
Yes.
We actually support the rule of law. We support equality before the law. So it means that we don't support any specific person or individual or organization. We just say that everyone should be equal before the law, should have these basic freedoms. And so this is what is being challenged here, because if you have the two groups who have a stake in the same economy, we all have a stake in, but setting rules for the rest of us, then that becomes a problem, because they are setting rules that benefit them. And that's why this 160 billion promise cuts in the wages is going to be opposed by unions. And the government needs to stand strong, because if we lose this fight, nothing, we will never be able to implement any reforms, because everything is going to touch the unions. And so if you can't face them now, you will never be able to face them.
Absolutely. And some people get really upset with me when I say that as an advocate of liberty, I'm not pro-business, I'm pro-markets. And there's a big difference between those two. Yeah. Being pro-business can mean, for example, that you endorse the status quo, the idea that business people can come with, you know, corrupt arrangements with politicians yes. to basically protect themselves. But if you're pro-market, you're actually being pro-poor, because it means that if some poor chap in a sand, you know, who lives on a sand dune in a shack in Cape Town comes up with an innovative idea that can put Discovery even out of business. Shout out to Adrian Gore. I hope you're listening. You know, that guy would have access to the market to be able to compete, get customers, and even get customers off of the establishment. Why in PIK are we not seeing a pro-market approach in South Africa? And why is it important to have that approach, especially in an economy like ours?
So what my friend Martin van Staden always says is that in order to get the big business out of government, you need to get government out of, in order to get money out of politics, you need to get politics out of money. And by that, he means that you need to have government have a hands-off approach to the economy, allow all of us to be free and only look for the violations of the rule of law, like things like fraud, theft, violence, and things like that. That should be their concern, and everything else they should just allow. Because the moment you have a government that has so much power in the economy that can regulate our own lives and tell us how you can build your house, what kind of phone you can buy, like what are the standards for this and that, what kind of banks you can start and so on and so on. As soon as you have that, it opens up the door for corruption.
Absolutely.
Either from big business, big labor, or whoever else. Someone can come to government and say, okay, oh, you regulate this area. These are actually better rules, and I'll pay you for the use of your time. So I should talk to you about this. But this, we have actually better rules. We've written them in our company and they work better. Oh, and here's R1 million just for yourself and your friends. And then the regulation is implemented, and then it's later found that the consequence of that regulation is that less people start businesses because it's just become harder. And so this is, that's what you need to stop. You need to stop the government having the right to regulate, because that's the only way to stop people being able to influence or having an incentive to influence government.
Mm.
If the government is not able to regulate anything, there's no point in seeking influence from government.
That's
you won't
right.
get any benefits.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to zoom us into a topic that, because you've been on my other shows, you know, whether it's, you know, the Big Daddy Liberty Show, the podcast, or the show that I facetiously call Blacks Only, in order to make fun of society's obsession with race.
Sure.
But there was a point you made on the last episode of Blacks Only, which was actually very good. And you made this point that, you know, what is the government's responsibility, and you and I as you know, classical liberals, libertarians, have very specific roles for the state, and the criminal justice element is one of those. We absolutely believe that if you're going to have a society founded on the rule of law, and of course the enforcement of law and order, that the state has to prioritize the criminal justice system. But you made a very important point. This was obviously prior to the budget speech, but I wanted you to chip in now around the state of criminal justice in this country. Talk to me about that point and why this budget speech maybe was a good one in that regard.
So in prior years, what has happened in South Africa is that while items such as, like, you know, welfare have increased above inflation, and other items interest on the debt, public servant salaries, all of those items have increased above inflation. At the same time, what you have seen is that the criminal justice clerks, that whether going to the Justice Department, the NPA, and so on, all of those critical institutions for the defense of liberty, all of those have increased in at a rate less than inflation. So in real terms, they have declined as these other areas have increased. So we've essentially sacrificed the breads and the circuses at the expense of a core government responsibility. And so I was happy to hear in this budget that they are increasing the allocation of the NPA, for example, by 100 million rands in the medium term. So I was happy that if they can sustain this reversal of this line, because it can't just be a once-off, like for this medium MTF period.
That's right.
It needs to be sustained, and we need to rebuild capacity of the police, the prosecution, the judiciary, and so on. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that some of the shocking images. If you look, I think it was the High Court in Pretoria, and someone was showing the record room where it was completely a mess, and you couldn't imagine how anyone could find records that place. And so this is those are the things we need to fix, and we need to have the capacity to fix them, because they lie at the core. If government cannot do their job in this area, then they will lose all credibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I actually wanted to zoom in on this, because, you know, crime fighting, law enforcement, a judiciary which is efficient. If you don't get this right, if you don't get this right in BIK, the real world consequences for the average South African, the South African family, which is what I care about more than anything else, really, the individual and families, the outcomes for them are absolutely dire.
Yeah.
We live in a country where since 1994, 500,000 South Africans have been murdered on our streets. That is a rate comparable to war zones in some cases. We have a murder rate here, which is absolutely shocking. 50 South Africans a day are murdered in this country. And this is of course, in tune with other crimes, you know, property related crimes and, but the, crime in and of itself is an absolute assault on an individual's life, liberty, and property rights. And, three areas that we care about.
And South Africans consistently have told government that this is our number one priority.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you'll have like jobs as number one. Sometimes you'll have like crime at number two, but it's always in the top two, top three, because like, you know, this is what like you don't understand, because you would think that in a democracy, government should care about the priorities. But here they are talking about EWC. Meanwhile,
exactly.
the top two or three priorities of South Africans, jobs and crime, are not addressed. Anyway, so it's a priority for all South Africans. We have seen with people burning their houses of suspected drug dealers, burning individuals suspected of crime. It's an absolute priority. If you don't do this, then you have societies descend into vigilantism. And
it's a monstrosity that you can't then put back into the jar.
Exactly.
I mean, the context you're raising is, and how we raise this issue on Blacks Only, the show. Remember, you can find all my shows on any of your social media. Just search for Big Daddy Liberty. Is in that week of the State of the Nation address, there was literally a case of a mother and two children who were burnt alive by a man who I think is suspected of being their spouse or whatever the case may be. And the following day, on budget, as the president was speaking, that same suspected alleged man who did that was then burnt by the community alive. And these scenes were playing out on social media. So if you don't get, you know, the law and order and really the rule of law, which underpins it, right, then you can build a monster in society, which is very difficult to put back into the jar.
And
what
you really do is radicalize societies. And once you've radicalized people, it's over.
Fully agreed. I think we're going to be heading to our, you know, sort of penultimate break. But before we do that, we're going to stay with Mpiyake after the break, about a 10-minute chat with him, as we look at, hey, what could the alternative budget maybe have been? What budget and what sort of reforms are going to be pro-family and pro-the individual? We'll see you after this short break.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. And I have in studio with me someone who I really want to become, I want to have become rather a common voice in analysis in this country. Mr. Mpiyake Dlamini from the Free Market Foundation. And you basically caught the conversation at the point where, you know, we were talking about the budget speech, some of the intricacies, the political outcomes of it, and really how it should inform, what it should have informed, what is the rule of the state. But, you know, fell short in my view. But I'll let the analyst chip in now, especially as we move into the last 8 minutes of this segment. Bihake, I want us to go wild. I want us to go wild and literally, for a moment, I want you to become Tito Mboweni. So you're not going to cook up a storm in studio, because our finance minister is known for, you know, his culinary prowess on social media and perhaps his bad sense of shoes, but that's another issue for another day. But I want us to basically present an alternative budget, what could have been the budget speech 2020, one which is based on liberty, which focuses on the individual, empowering families over the state and over politicians. What would that budget speech have looked at? Let me begin this segment by saying, Mpiyake, the top five reforms that we actually should have heard in the budget speech.
Okay, I would say the first reform would be on the property rights regime. But, you know, some of this, the difficulty of this is that some of these things are not in the purview of the budget speech itself.
Yeah.
So mostly the focus on the day is taxes division of revenue between the different levels of government.
Mm.
And then the final thing is appropriations for national government. And so, from that point of view, then having said that, I would say like cutting more spending, especially for the money going to SOEs, I think that's a complete waste. I don't think we'll ever see a cent of that money. Instead of, putting the blame on pensioners and saying that they must carry the state. The state should learn to be frugal and live within its means.
Absolutely.
We are already paying enough to the state. And the second thing which should have been announced is that, okay, as much as they announced that they are reducing or rather allowing more people to not pay transfer duties because they fall within the threshold now. And so as much as they do that because they are trying to spark or encourage the property market, well, there's a better way to encourage the property market, and that's to drop EWC.
That's
to
right.
To say that we will no longer undergo this disastrous process of expropriation without compensation.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that Treasury, when looking at their own data, they have seen that the property market has been weak, and that's why they're taking this step. And a part of that is probably EWC. They talk about it, the fact that we now have an amendment bill on the table and facing parliament. And
just very quickly, because no young person is perhaps going to finish a degree, start a job, and then look to buy a property in an economy where he knows and he's being told by politicians that he faces the risk of losing that property without compensation. Like, it doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't. And if you were planning to buy, let's say you are some millionaire from somewhere, the USA or something, like all of a sudden there's EWC, why should you take on the risk?
Exactly.
I mean, you have your own home country which has strong property rights protection. You don't need South Africa's risk, and you can just take your money out of the country. But the third thing I would have announced in terms of reforms, now this is going to my wish list now, but just allowing people in rural areas to own their own land. The fourth thing was...
Absolutely. No, let's take a moment there. Because I think you and I both would be immediate beneficiaries of this. You know, we have a lot of chatter in this country around who owns the land, who doesn't. And you tend to find that government, in its own reporting, underreports the fact that there are millions of black South Africans who live on oodles of very productive land, but cannot use that land because, one, historically, they were dispossessed of it, or rather, they were dispossessed of the ownership of it, the ability to fence it off and say, this is mine. And really, we talk a lot about the individual, but really, we're a family society, and ownership often takes the form of families. But those same families, black families in particular, have been disallowed from saying, hey, we're fencing this off, it belongs to the Gamini family, in your case, Ngobese in mine, and we can productively use it to build income over time and, you know, grow our savings and blah, blah, blah. Those individuals are not part of this conversation, are they? We never feature them. However, this budget speech could have spoken to that, to say, hey, we're devoting some rands to rolling out title deeds to those people. Is that the sort of reforms you're talking about?
Exactly. I mean, it's the kind of reform I'm talking about, or even a structure that we've talked about before, allowing some sort of thing like sectional title to allow families to own property jointly.
That's right.
Because it solves the problem. You don't need traditional leaders. You can just have families do it within their own.
Right.
Yeah. So it's definitely a great reform that I would like to see. And if you look at the poverty problem in South Africa, you realize that it's actually a rural communal land problem.
Absolutely.
And if you solve this one issue, you will virtually start to solve poverty. It won't happen overnight, but you'll start to solve it.
But almost with the stroke of a pen.
Yes.
Because you can literally have a president sign a proclamation saying, guys, this idea of maintaining these former Bantu stands and the like, which historically placed black people on the land but didn't give them ownership of it, it's over.
Yeah.
Now we're going to embark on a process. Firstly, we want to clean up the Department of Land Affairs because it's absolute corrupt entity.
Yeah.
Whenever people say, oh, you know, that department could never meet its goals because really, willing buyer, willing seller failed. No, willing buyer, willing seller didn't fail. Yeah. If they had the money. The problem is if you're going to be corrupt and misappropriate the money, steal, loot the money, then of course you can't buy any land for redistribution. That's a separate issue.
Yeah.
We'll probably have that conversation a bit later. But I want to come back to this issue because I think it's super important, and the budget speech could have gone a long way towards it. Allaying the fears of South Africans on the idea of their property and shutting down. I think the finance minister could have shut down the voices of this loud left we have in this country who are basically scaremongering and saying, yeah, either A, as the EFF, the state must own all land and you and me must be serfs on it, or, you know, essentially begging the state for a place for shelter.
Yeah.
Or B, as the ANC would have it, that they give themselves this power to steal property from you. And again, when we talk about property It's not just about land, by the way. Property is defined very broadly in the Constitution. This budget speech could have gone a little bit in the way of saying, guys, we know it's on the books informally, but in this budget at least, we're not going
to
do it.
So if you look at the commitment to the commitment that the government made in terms of following the Treasury strategy document last year that they said is now their guiding policy. Mr. Minister Tito said it's their action plan. That document actually said that's one of the institutions you need for sustained growth over time is strong property rights.
Absolutely.
And so they didn't make any specific recommendations, but the fact that they said that and the government is pursuing it, WC, it shows that the government is talking across itself as the executive director of the FMF likes to say, Leon Low, the one left hand doesn't know what the other left hand is doing.
And of course your final reform, the fifth reform, as we head into the last minute.
The final reform, I would say, is just to deregulate even more.
Absolutely.
We have seen some deregulation in terms of like capital flows over borders, and that's good. But I would think we can go further, especially in the areas of labor, banking, finance, insurance. All of these areas are under Minister Tito Mboweni's direct influence as a policymaker in the finance department. And so he could really go even further than what he has done. He has done a lot already, but he needs to do more just because so many people are poor, and we can't judge by ourselves through our own political status. We have to judge by how many poor people can get out of poverty.
And the weird thing, just very briefly, is they talk about, you know, adding more SOEs. I mean, they wanted to add a state bank. And even the banking association is like, guys, what will it do that we can't do?
Yeah.
Especially, and it comes back to your last point about deregulation. Just deregulate the market, allow us to be able to lend cheaply, exactly. And you'll get what you want.
Exactly. No, this is something they keep on missing. And the sovereign wealth fund if it just becomes a counter-cyclical tool, as Minister Mboweni suggested, then it could be a very good idea, like which saves us future taxes.
Absolutely.
But if it's used for all other sorts of goals and government, you know, priorities, then it will just lose effectiveness.
I fully agree. Guys, that was Mr. Mpiake Dlamini from the Free Market Foundation, a voice who we'll have on the show quite a lot. After the short break, the last segment of the show, as we look at what trended on social media and what some of the other big news items that you must watch out for.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Molo San Bonani, hello, how's it? Shalom and Shabbat Shalom to you if you are an observant Jew. If you're not, Shabbat Shalom to you. Guys, last few minutes of the show, I want to look basically, as I'll always do on every show, at what's happening on social media. You know, that weird world that maybe a lot of people avoid, but sometimes, you know, you should pay attention to in terms of what the conversations are by mostly the chattering classes. So big trend right now is Santon. I'm presuming because of the EFF ESCOM mark. I'll be watching that, and I'll be providing some commentary on my other shows. Remember, you can find those shows by just following me on social media. I put out regular videos and 3 shows a week on my online platform. The Big Daddy Liberty Show is a show that will come out every Wednesday. This is the show outside of Chai FM, and it's a variety show. I usually bring you special inserts, interviews also, which I'll always bring to you, of course, on this Friday show. You've got an exclusive in that regard. And I have a funny show called funny insofar as the name, Blacks Only. Again, this is me taking the mickey out of society's obsession with race and gender and all these things that actually don't matter. What really matters, as I argue on that show, with its facetious name, is intellectual diversity. That is the only diversity that really matters. So yes, on that show you'll see black individuals only, but I make the point that we're not the same. Contrary to what the politicians tell you, all black folk are not the same. We're actually different. We can hold different views, and I encourage that on the show, a move away from the obsession on race and identity politics, and actually discussing real issues with real people and diverse intellectual voices, something you often never hear on traditional media. And of course, a podcast every Friday. I'll put one out today. Guys, one of the things I really want us to look at is this coronavirus. There's a lot, that's sort of buzzing around on social media internationally about it as different countries react differently to it. I mean, there's 2 fundamental approaches that we've seen, to the coronavirus. You know, and I sort of segmented it by saying, one is the Russia-Israel type approach, which is once this sort of outbreak occurs, you know, these governments act quite swiftly to contain. Contain on the one hand by not bringing it into their country, so they'll often put travel restrictions and the like. And when they do this, it generally works. I mean, these two countries have been able to put a lid on this issue quite well. And then there's the Italy approach, which unfortunately, I suppose, is yoked to the European project of the EU, where there's free movement, which is not a problem in and of itself, but sometimes individual countries then find themselves not being able to control when an outbreak like this does happen. And, you know, Italy now is going full on China in terms of, you know, putting soldiers on the street, closing down neighborhoods, you know, quarantining areas, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's very interesting. And again, when you look at the numbers, I don't know. Maybe we need to get like a health expert to come on the show and give us perspective. You know, shout out to Jonathan Witt, and maybe he can give some views on this. But I don't think we should be panicking about this. I mean, globally, only 77,000 people are infected, and there's only been 2,400 deaths recorded. Now, that's 2,400 too many deaths. But I mean, when you compare it to other diseases, you know, contagious ones like, you know, the flu and the like, they have a higher body count. So I don't know. I think if any of you are health experts, specifically public health experts, you know, holler at me on my social media. Let me know if I'm wrong on this. But I just don't see the need to panic yet, especially when you consider that, you know, South Africa right now is considering repatriating 132 people from Wuhan. Wuhan, of course, is that province in China where this outbreak first broke out, that was shut down and the like. And Mbeki made the point earlier on when we were talking about the budget that sometimes the South African government can have two voices say completely opposing things, but they come from one government. So, for instance, the health minister himself said, look, I don't think it's a good idea to bring these people back from China. And he's supported by the South African Medical Association in that regard. I saw an interview with their chairperson, Angelique Kutsia. But the president basically said, hey, you know, let's bring these people back. And they're actually in the process of doing this. So let's see how that plays out. And I think my last point on the coronavirus, and this is my more interesting one, and any of you Zionists out there will perhaps love this point, is, you know, Israel has basically stated, hey, we're about a few weeks away from an actual vaccine to the coronavirus. And again, it just speaks to that startup nation, that the innovative nation that Israel is. And perhaps this is a good sign of what Tikkun Olam is. You know, the idea that you develop all this wonderful tech for the benefit of the whole world. Now, here's my cheeky question for the day. Will any BDS activists take and use this vaccine? So you guys are always full of, you know, criticism for Israel, but now the chips are down and you might actually get this coronavirus. Are you willing to take, you know, admit that Israel is doing good work and take that vaccine? That's my cheeky question for you for the day. And guys, as I quickly rise in my last 30 seconds, we got a comment from Cliffy. I appreciate all comments that come through. And he says, why aren't you and your guests trying to run this country? I would vote for you. Well, Cliffy, thank you for the compliment. But no, brother, I am not a politician. But hopefully they'll be listening to this show. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. You'll find me on all my social media. And we'll see you next week on Friday at 9 a.m.